break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and today we're bringing you a series of outtakes from the Hunter Prey episode with Taylor Anthony. We had so many tangents, we decided to keep the main episode focused and corralled most of the nonsense right here. In turn, we'll cover Mr. Freeze, Space Mayo Quality, Sheridan's Dad Energy, Kosh as a Drifter Hobo, Weaves in Space, and a whole lot more. We first drop in with Dre as he pontificates on what really matters here.
We did the Geometry of Shadows, which incidentally had an actor who played in both Deep Space Nine, who played in Babylon 5, and was the Mr. Freeze villain in Batman the Animated Series. So, Mike, we have an interesting Mike streak going in season 2 of Babylon 5. Last episode, Michael Ansara, prolific actor, for a great career, but that's not what we care about here. What we care about on You Gotta Check This Out is he was in Babylon 5, Deep Space Nine, and Batman the Animated Series as Mr. Freeze. And spoiler alert, on this upcoming episode that we are about to discuss, we do in fact have an actor who was on Babylon 5 and Batman, but woof, missed Deep Space Nine somehow, and we'll talk about him when we get there. We're in the midst of season 2. A bunch has been going on. I'm going to do the ask our guest a question. So as Mike mentioned, premise of the show is ideal world. Ideal world is you haven't seen the show. We understand that some guests are going to have seen the show. Some guests intentionally have seen the show. But part of the pitch when we were pitching the show is, are there guests that are good sci-fi fantasy fans that haven't? You mentioned you hadn't seen it. So I'm curious, did Hunter Prey encourage you to watch any more Babylon 5 when you were done?
Oh, it would have had I not spoiled it for myself and realized that the two outstanding favorite actors on this episode doing the most are not featured in any other episodes, which is kind of astounding to me. That's, of course, Richard Mall's character. And then Sarah, the woman who was apparently transported out of a Cary Grant movie right into early 90s television.
Thank you.
Show.
That's a good point that you brought up about some of the writing and some of the other stuff is this was all written by J. Michael Straczynski, JMS. Previous episodes of the show, we talk him a ton. Part of that's good because he was able to control the whole arc. Part of that is one voice, one writer, and you can very clearly see in some cases his dialogue is very good. In other case, again, I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to keep saying, do you want mayo on that this entire show? So I'm warning all of you ahead of time.
That was so funny.
Such a
we have tip. Mayo still?
But I think, well, it's interesting. I think we would in the future, but then, of course, in space, you probably wouldn't have eggs. So, yeah, this is...
That was my first concern. Oil, that's fine. Eggs? I mean, garlic?
Probably not. Well, they do a lot of smuggling on this show, so who knows what they're pulling into on some of those ports. I mean, it could be all the alien animals, any different kind of eggs on there. I mean, it might be not be exactly mayo, but it's kind
close
of
close approximation.
Yeah, so we have, but we do have a bunch going on there in terms of just, you know, everything going on in the future. Do we like it, et cetera? But one person writing it, and it was on a shoestring budget. That is the real big thing, is that this was actually... Previous episode, I'm going to keep plugging the back catalog, Mike, as you know. But
you're pro at that.
Inside jokes to another podcast. That's exactly what you want on any new podcast, right? But in that, it was shoestring budget because he pitched this to Star Trek, and Star Trek went ahead with his script, went ahead with the Bible, and he made it on his own. And if you listen to JMS on the DVD commentaries, the way we recommend people watch this now is go to your local library. The old DVDs are the best. You can find this. The DVDs are either cheap on eBay. I believe it's...
Jaina just let us know for sure it's on Tubi.
It is.
So I've been able to find out some old ones.
I saw a total of 4 prescription drug commercials at one point. It's in the middle of my notes.
That's what it's supposed to be like. But the fact that it followed you want mayo on that is where I'm just like, what is going on here? And that line is living
just,
red for
it's mayo.
That was a first pass of a dialogue exchange for sure. And again, that is sort of my pet peeve with series like this, where it feels like there's been so much work put into like politics, the politics side of things that were like, oh, we can leave the dialogue to last. Like,
Yeah, there's so many first draft lines like that. Like it feels like, okay, we'll figure out something better they can say instead of mayo to that later.
and then on the day we just get too busy. And, no, just the mail lane's fine. It's really not that
Yep. We'll
bad.
just
I mean,
leave
I
it
don't
here.
think
Yeah.
Although here's the defense, right? You know, when you have shows, think like Friends, where everybody is just super clever and snap, 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 snap. He's a, you know, career. Sheridan is a career military guy. He definitely has exudes the dad energy. So it's like he doesn't have to be clever all the time. That's my subtle defense, but it did.
He's just canonically unfunny.
That does definitely track. Okay, next season, next scene,
Oh my
something.
God.
Next,
next
next
seasoning.
Seasoning
Next seasoning
on
on
Babylon
Ghirardelli.
5.
On Ghirardelli.
I loved the reaction of, no, I'm not going to sell you this illegal thing because he wanted too bad, because that is 100% how I thought every like weed deal would ever go in my life. Like I was going to, I never did, but if I'm such a goody two shoes, I feel like I would, they would smell it on me and be like, no, you can't have any.
Not
Okay.
you.
Yeah, you can't
Gotcha.
have this illegal substance. Other people can.
This feels like another smuggling plot because something we keep talking about here is like there's so much smuggling going on in B5. It started out as JMS wanted to do a smuggling show. I was just wondering because there's so much smugglers, what kind of stuff are we smuggling all the time onto B5? I know we talked a little bit about foods they have coming in. But there's got to be so many undocumented alien pets, food, collectible cars, just bees. Just imagine all the bees that people are trying to sneak in there for nefarious bee purposes.
Well, we know there's no hats. There's no options as far as hats go in there.
Garibaldi takes all of them for his cosplay.
Not too many good costume changes. He's got a whole closet hidden somewhere on the station where he just goes in and he's, who am I today, fellas?
Last episode, he pretended to be a door-to-door salesman on a whim. I mean, the
I
guy is just
love
getting
that.
into, he's just feeling himself, that Ghirardelli.
Oh man,
Ghirardelli.
amazing.
Ghirardelli! Michael and the Ghirardellis. Oh! I really enjoyed what Taylor was bringing up about how, compared to the utopia of Star Trek, Babylon 5 is much, it goes more into the down below, the people of society who haven't been in the utopia. They don't have the replicators there or anything, so they don't have to get into those issues of scarcity. And what you were just saying, Dre, was about the shoestring budget they have. It almost perfectly mimics that. So Babylon 5 is almost set up to be that kind of show and to really go into it. Yeah, it's kind of a, it's not that, I wish you would have been able to see kind of a few more episodes that dive deeper into that, Taylor.
Maybe I will.
I like your point, Mike, that it does do that. And there are some arguments that we've started having on the show about, do some of these things that stick out weirdly, do they actually make sense in a, yeah, are you're on a space station with all of these things going on. Does it make sense that our heroes, I can't wait, I'm going to spoil the episode before we get to it, that our heroes, their disguise is a lame hat because it's like you're on a space station. What, you don't have a big, you don't have a replicator to make any outfit you want. That's your only disguise. And yeah, but the shoestring
I
point.
hate that you justified the hack because I was ready to rip into
Oh, we had better, but we'll see if it will. But we have
it.
started on the show thanks to guests coming up
Well,
with their.
there is a lot coming up about that hat. Don't worry, that's going to come in back in this episode. Yeah, I think several of these episodes, what I kept noticing is that something that Taylor did bring up earlier. The captain got replaced half between season one and season two. That was, it's pretty noticeable if you go look back in Babylon 5 history. And I think part of what that had made JMS had to do for this crop of episodes for the first half of season two was almost reestablish a world building section because he had to have several episodes that was just, all right, Sheridan's the lead character now. We have to establish him as this brash cat kind of captain that wants to be a Picard, but keeps getting pulled in the opposite direction for a Shatner type.
How was that different from the first season's captain?
The first season's captain will always came across as more kind of stoic and very, very diplomatic on everything. But he had this kind of streak where he liked to walk around sucker punching people randomly on the ship. It was a mix of tones.
A balance, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's like the Force for Babylon 5. Sometimes you suck a punch, sometimes you're diplomatic.
Well, what I do like when you're asking about the difference between the two captains, it is really fascinating. And I'm curious if this will be the show you explain it, Mike, or if it'll be a future one where you have your Picard Shatner index comparing the captains. Because in season one, we have Michael O'Hare playing Jeffrey Sinclair, who is supposed to be more wise and thoughtful as a captain. But again, as Mike is noticing, like every episode, he's just like, give me a gun, I'm going to go in guns blazing. And that doesn't seem very zen. We're introduced to Sheridan. This episode is a good example, as we discovered, where he shouts a lot. He's like almost like a chihuahua that barks a lot. But I'm glad that landed. But then when you watch what he does, it's very tame and muted, right? He doesn't directly confront. He's go look over there and then does things calmly. So it's very funny where kind of in lore, in universe for fans, Sheridan is portrayed as the more guns blazing, gung-ho captain. Sinclair is more of the thoughtful, but when you actually kind of analyze their actions, Sheridan is really more thoughtful. And I thought this was actually a good episode to kind of show that.
I think that it's also apropos that this was the Return of the Lightning Sucker Punch episode.
I did. That was a cool, I will say that. Yeah, you have the Psi-Corps brings people back from the dead and gives them lightning powers to be like Manchurian Candidate assassins, which is, as I'm replaying that, that sounds a lot cooler. Because there are, I think on paper, some of these ideas are cool. Like Taylor, you were mentioning this, like the thought behind it and where we've come for now. So if you watch, you're the second person on this show to bring up the Foundation. And I think I've seen clips and it looks amazing, right? And you look at Babylon 5 and you read the ideas on paper and you're like, I'm sure this looks amazing, right? And you watch the episode and you're like, okay, Manchurian candidate, zombie, electric being, sounds really cool. What they could do with the special effects didn't quite live up to that.
Yeah. Oh, especially a lot of those season one interstitials with the early CGI space that they were just developing that technology. It's kind of interesting to go back and see. It looks like a lot of early CGI cartoons from that day too.
And especially that sort of effect, I mean, is typically, at least at the time, was saved for bigger budget films, right? Mm-hmm. So even having that in TV at all was kind of sick.
How did that age for you, seeing it for the first time? Because, I mean, me and Mike have nostalgia glass, but Taylor, first time, how good, bad did it age in the midst of, you know, Tubi also playing prescription drug ads in the middle of it?
Oh, my gosh. The ship, the effects in general sort of and the interaction between the actor and the effect, where it's just like you're looking at it and then we're going to do like the 1-2 shot, right? But it felt a lot like, I love those old Phantasmagoria, and then there was another one about Jack the Ripper, which featured Christopher Walken, but like the old computer games that, like, I forget what the term is for them. But it was, they would have like just real filmed video.
Okay. Is this one too old? Yeah. Cause as you mentioned, me and Mike are a little older. In Red Alert 2, they actually had Tim Curry as like a Russian general that kept, those exact things, those cut to video in the midst of games where the game graphics are horrible, but then randomly you get a clip with real actors against a green screen.
Yes. PC and games the one at the that time. I was, exactly, the PC games at the time. One of them is literally, and this is an aside, but it's called Ripper, and the cast is absolutely stacked. It's got Christopher Walken, Paul Giamatti, Karen Allen from the first Indiana Jones movie, John Rhys Davies.
Burgess Meredith, keeping our Batman connection up, got the original Penguin. This feels made up. This feels, I want to think that you, that before this episode, you spent a bunch of time making up a fake Wikipedia article. Seriously, though.
Ripper. No, I can watch. I've definitely heard of this before.
It is incredible.
Sweet.
This is,
if you can just sit, maybe enjoy an adult beverage or an adult snack and watch it, just a game, like a playthrough of it. It's fantastic.
And as a Lord of the Rings kind of thing, it's really weird that John Rhys Davies' character is named Viggo. This would have been before Lord of the Rings, right?
Way before it, yeah.
All right, that's 5 years. Yeah, it was calling it. All right,
Paul Giamatti on this thing. Jeez.
Back to the boring show that's the premise of this. Right? Instead of just that's hijacking Mike, and I'm like, actually, we're talking Ripper for the rest of the episode. Yeah. All right.
Drake, can't we get back over to playing the Ripper? Yeah.
Next episode, The Coming of Shadows, Hugo Award winning. One of the key things to note is back in the day in the 90s, JMS was huge on the internet, huge in user groups, and the Hugo Awards required fan votes. season one, they didn't get a Hugo nomination because the fan said the entire season is great. So season two, they consolidated and they universally agreed that The Coming of Shadows was the best this season had to offer. It was an episode Mike suggested for us to go over for this show. And again, to defend
what
myself.
What was your thought process, Dre? That was a really good episode with all kinds of good stuff happened.
Hunter Prey has Richard Mole dressed as Blade, and that's all I got to say.
Taylor, boo this man. Boo.
It's too much work, Mike, although maybe I will. I can rewind this episode and point out that, Taylor, you yourself noted that your biggest regret from this episode, not the episode itself, is that your two favorite characters don't stick around.
He truly is the absolute one of the best parts. And I was trying to figure out where I know the actor from. And I don't know if you guys have seen this, but he does a fantastic turn in the movie. But I'm a Cheerleader with Natasha Lyonne. Oh, yes. God, he is so good in that film.
He's somebody who's helping them out? I haven't seen that since in the 90s, since it was first out.
Yeah, so it's about a gay conversion camp, and there's a gay couple, Richard Mall and another actor, his name escapes me, but they're a couple who help expose these kids who have been sent to conversion camp. No, you can actually be yourselves and live out and be gay and proud. And it's fantastic because he plays it completely straight. He is not playing it as a joke. He's not comic relief. He is just a guy. You feel that he has a lot of like tension and trauma a bit in his performance. He looks like somebody who might be like post-military or something. He does so much with so little in the film. It was such a delight to see him here.
I absolutely love that movie. Again, yeah, Richard Mole, I was huge on him from Night Court, and then I'm like, oh, he's in Batman. He is fantastic in everything, and, you know, passed too soon, and it did sound like he kind of got fed up with the industry, which, is more than fine. And then, tying things together too, the amazing Natasha Lyonne, who shows up in Fantastic Four. So, yes, check out, we might be burying the end of the show where we usually tell people what to check out. We already have some great things. The Trevor Project and But I'm a Cheerleader are two things I would say you have to check out. And
actually, a quick check out. I think today, one of my favorite YouTube content creators, Matt, BAUM, as in money, E, he releases a series of videos about LGBTQ representation in media, specifically sitcoms. And I looked, there was no Babylon 5 episode, so I was a little bit disappointed, but he does have an absolutely fabulous Star Trek episode that made me cry. And literally today, I think earlier today, he released a retrospective on But I'm a Cheerleader.
That's two years ago. That is amazing. And I will say, after this show, I'm going to put on my list to ping because, sorry to stay in the weeds, but it's fine. This is what we planned, this just to be aware, Taylor. Like, ahead of the show, me and Mike were like,
good. I feel bad. I'm like, I am a tangent girly.
No, tangents go with the territory. Yeah,
it's a podcast, right? Exactly.
I'm going to disappear into the shadows.
I'm like, what are you talking?
But amazing thing about Babylon 5 is that Talia Winters, there was supposed to be a lesbian subplot with her and Captain Ivanova, or Commander Ivanova, Commander Ivanova. Mm-hmm. And ostensibly what happened was clearly right at the time, there was a level they could get away with. So there were things that were obvious. One of her last scenes in the show, sorry, spoilers for people that were expecting Talia to stick around. As you know how much me and Mike love her performances in the show, she's like waking up in bed in Susan's room. So it was really fascinating because there was this huge potential for an amazing arc that just didn't get fleshed out in combination because obviously the studios, what they would allow, and then the actress left. So
that was in there for an episode. Like, she woke up in the bed next to her, but they just didn't explain it. Or it's almost like, well, that was from the cutting room.
They're just best friends, you guys. Yeah. They're just really good friends.
You need to
they were roommates.
Yeah, that's 100%. So, okay, glad we got that. And the good thing is these next couple of episodes.
So before we get into that, we did miss something on episode 30. That is the beginnings of some love affair going on between Sheridan and Delenn. They had that dinner in that episode as a B plot.
Oh, yeah.
Started seeding their relationship that early.
Okay, that is actually useful because that does kind of come to fruition at the end here, which is, oh my God, there is so much to throw at someone new to the show. So Delenn is Ambari. They have boneheads. Delenn has gone through a process where she went into Chrysalis. She came out and looked partially human. She has hair. Normally, Minbari do not. And there is going to be a love plot between her and Sheridan, or as I argue, Mike, a love triangle between her, Sheridan, and Kosh. And
Mike, I thought you were going to say a love triangle between her, Sheridan, and a triangle on her forehead that sometimes shines out.
That's why the triangle is on the forehead.
That's the triangle. That's it.
If you wind up in a love triangle, a triangle shows up on your forehead again. Callbacks to previous episodes.
Oh my gosh. The ship was hilarious. I didn't mind the CGI. It's fine. It's of the time, you know, and it wasn't meant to look realistic. It was meant to look like alien technology. So I feel like there is a lot of leniency there. The color is horrendous. The choice of this camouflage skin is so upsetting. I don't know why they went with it. And then the design of Kosh as well. You can absolutely, like when you said this is on a shoestring budget, you can tell. Because this man, I think he's supposed to have been hiding, but they don't have a space, it seems, for him to actually fit in. So we have him just stepping forward and then stepping back to his initial mark, never actually going anywhere. It's just, oh, you caught him just as he left. And then just, it's fantastic. It's that sort of shoestring direction that I adore. Love-hate relationship with old shows like that. It's so funny.
Well, he's just like out in the open too. Like it's so well lit. He's right there.
He's
it's just like,
so
oh yeah.
Well lit.
And there's Kosh over there in the corner.
Physically unable to ever camouflage himself. Like he's never going to look like a coat rack. Like you're never going to put a trench coat over him and sneak him in the movies.
Yeah, I went through this fever dream and put him as a picture with a guitar as a space drifting hobo in the corner because I couldn't get that out of my mind as Kosh is just this guy. Yeah, there's just Kosh over there. He's trying to sing us these songs. He doesn't really know the words, but you know, he's harmless.
And meanwhile, his character design looks like if GLaDOS and the alien from Aliens, the xenomorph, had a baby. Like we've got the GLaDOS sort of like face with like just tiny little tentacles, just like ever so slightly peeking out.
Oh, I know. That's not even his face, too, because the whole thing is a containment suit. Yeah, it looks so much like a face, but that's an environment suit so that the alien inside can live. So those are all choices made aesthetically on the outside.
Wow. Again, do they have eyes and a sense of color?
Dre, I mean, you're our inside correspondent from doing all the behind-the-scenes stuff. What do you have to say about the Kosh design here and the environment suit?
Taylor, what's funny is I will say you sound a lot like JMS because he is on a few of the director's commentaries on the season and stuff like that bugged him where he's just, we didn't have space. We did what we could. We just had to get going. I think there definitely weren't room for takes. There are, if I'm trying to do the work for it, the in-show universe, I do think the Vorlons making themselves look less threatening, stealing from the recent Superman that released, that was their like argument for why Superman wears trunks. Is Superman is a scary god, wearing the trunks makes him look a little disarming. So all of these choices by the Vorlon, yeah, they are conscious choices. And if it is to say, let's look silly to people so they underestimate us, because they are probably the second most powerful being in the universe at this point, or at least our corner of the universe. Outside of that, yeah, it's just, you know, a lot of this is first passes. And as the show progresses, they get better at shading it right, lighting it right to look more ominous. And I don't know. I do think the ship is just very 90s when you're like, do they have eyes? I do think that neon green, like sweet ship feels straight out of the 90s.
We had only just escaped the grasp of the true neon 80s and slight. I mean, the ship of the coloration itself is like black, kind of amorphizing a neon green, which almost feels like the grunge era.
So yeah, a lot going on there. And yeah, if Kosh is into grunge, yeah, that could be it too, Mike. The rest,
I actually like do see
the bit has early like for grunge.
Like a cameo-styled Z Cavaricci's pants type thing. I think Kosh would look good in those too, along with the ship.
And then the other like thing that we've started attaching as like world building, Mike and I have, is that you're in space. You don't have a lot of stuff. There are people that like cosplaying. So it's like, you bring up like your cosplaying or LARPing outfits and you don't have a lot of alternate clothes. So many of the characters in this show, when they have to come up with a second outfit, it is definitely their cosplay outfit, which is going to happen at least one more time this episode.
That is so funny.
Yeah, you got your casual outfit and you got your cosplay outfit in this world.
Especially because if you think about the purpose of a hat is to protect you from the elements, like the sun and the wind, things that famously not included in a space
Good
station.
point. Yeah, so all it's there for is the fun
So
and
he's
the
literally
fashion.
the only person in the whole station. I mean, in the scene, you see him, he's the only person wearing a hat. In another Sondheim reference, does anybody still wear a hat? I don't think so. And he's already so tall, and the hat itself adds height. So he's this giant man walking around who, and he really just seems like he's leaning into the, if I just look really conspicuous, they won't even look at me because they'll be like, no way, he's that dumb. It's some sort of charity to let him continue going on pretending to be the head of security at this point. The man is clearly not cut out for this life.
No, he just wants to throw his new cosplay character at you. Hey, you guys got to check out my new hat. Now I can be Professor Ghirardelli.
Yeah, this is my homegrown character.
By the way, this, Mike and I have, this is, I think, our sixth or seventh recording. We're starting to get recurring bits. And so, guests adding lore to Babylon 5, you are contributing to the Garibaldi is the only person in Babylon 5 that wears a hat. That is an amazing addition. Just chef's kiss. Thank you, Taylor, for nothing else.
I'm so happy. If I contribute nothing else, just that's perfect.
For it, not just the funny hat, but have we noticed the funny coat that Franklin had too?
Yes.
He was wearing a coat, this blue puffy coat that was like five sizes too big for him over his regular clothes. Like he was competing for the funniest piece of clothing with Garibaldi, which you can't win that.
Very 90s coded outfit, the puffy coat. Very, if you've seen Sinners, the very after credit scene.
So that I need to catch up
Oh, I
on.
haven't seen Sinners yet.
Oh, I am so excited for you guys. That
Excellent.
is my Michael, and I saw it in the theater. And we are not really theater people, but he are going to see movies in the movie theater people. But he immediately was like, I want to watch that again. We were very tempted to just stay in the theater and watch it a second time
And see
immediately
the
after.
next
It's
one.
that good.
And Mike, did you get the impression? It did definitely feel like it, that like Garibaldi is both painted as and tries to act as Batman a lot this episode.
Oh yeah, he jumps right into this is his chance to go and have his Batman episode, and I'm gonna get this guy.
Is
Yeah,
it, yeah,
I
he's
really
he,
got those feelings.
yeah, he's I'm not gonna tell you, you tell me, or I'm gonna dig your eyes out with a spoon or something. And it's like, you're not intimidating. You're in that hat. No one should be intimidated,
Truly.
but apparently they are.
A hat, a cowl, not is.
Yeah.
Also, you say it's a watch, but I heard it's an antique from the 19th, 20th century.
Exactly. Yeah, they definitely did that a lot.
Again, we stretch it. We're like, oh gosh, the 20th century, such antiques. And yet they're still saying phrases and idioms that originate from the 80s, like assembly not required. That would be as if we were reciting like Shakespeare, my mistress' eyes are nothing like the sun. Like, it's just, that's just me in the bathroom by myself. Nobody else does it.
Yeah, the anachronisms are so tough to get right with that stuff.
Exactly.
I'm annoyed, actually. You are still adding to the lore. You blame Evan. Go listen to the previous episode, everybody. This is Evan's fault, but you're an amazing guest, Evan. You are adding to the lore that basically space in the future is a bunch of theater kids or a bunch of weebs that went
It
to
feels like
space
it. Uh-huh.
and speak in old-timey.
Weebs in space!
They're referencing, like commercials from the 80s. Some assembly required. You like, yeah, no way, Jose. That's coming next.
But exactly. So all of these people went to space. They have cosplay outfits. They're basically like speaking in old timey. This lines up. Babylon 5 is not populated with normal representatives of Earth. And we even have future episodes, Mike. I know you're on season three. There are a couple that do that. It's all the cosplay nerds that tick people off. This, sorry, Taylor, you're adding to it. This easily lines up.
I mean, it makes sense if if the human population is growing exponentially, we're 2025, we're at what, 8 billion people, we keep growing. It's, the population of Babylon's a tiny percentage of the population on Earth. Yeah, it's going to mostly be the most obnoxious people on the planet who want to do something like this. I don't know if I would want to go to a dinner with a whole bunch of astronauts. I would want to go to dinner with maybe one astronaut and ask them a lot of questions. But if I'm the only not astronaut there, I'm going to be really bummed out. And it feels like the same sort of like very intense energy here.
And that's all the nonsense we got that's fit to drop. Join us next week for a full episode where we cover Season 2, Episode 17, In the Shadow of Zahadoom with Megan Bushhausen. Cheers, all.